Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight. Tonight I have with us John Murphy, and we're going to talk about his newest book, Zentrepreneur, Get Out of the Way and Lead, to Create a Culture of Innovation and Fearlessness. Thanks, John, for taking the time to be with us. Before we get started, why don't you tell us, you're welcome, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your past, how you came to be where you are today and do what it is, what you do, and what you're doing now.
Well, thank you, Eva. It's been truly an evolution. You know, I'm somebody who was born on Friday the 13th. My last name is Murphy, as in Murphy's Law. And by the age of three, I'd had two near-death experiences. So I got started in a very interesting way in this world. And ever since I was growing up, it seemed I'd have tough luck, you know. The superstition might have it, you know, Friday the 13th, Murphy's Law. I had a lot of doubts about myself, and maybe I was just, I was doomed. In high school, I had a very serious foot accident and was told I might never walk again without limping and that my football career was over. And yet, 2 years later, I was playing at the University of Notre Dame. So I've also, in addition to having some tough luck, I've also had I've discovered I have a capacity for dealing with it. And so I've evolved into a business consultant, an author. I was told once by a boss that I'd never make it as a writer, and I now have 17 books published. So every time I get dealt one of these, I call them the yeah buts, you know, these reasons why you shouldn't try something or shouldn't do something or it isn't a good time or whatever. I've pursued, and I've turned a lot of lemons into lemonade.
So I know this is a thing everybody asks you, and I don't like to ask questions that everybody asks, but I got to do it because I know my listeners are going to want to hear it. Tell us about what happened for you to have 10 near-death experiences by the time you were 2 years old.
Yeah, well, one was I was sick and had a cold, and so I decided that the remedy for that was a bottle of aspirin, and I was also pretty good at climbing, and this was back in the day before childproof caps and such, so I ate a whole bottle of aspirin and had to be rushed to the hospital and had my stomach pumped, I survived it. I think my mother might have resulted with a few gray hairs, but I got through that. And the other experience was I was goofing around with my older sister and older brother, and I sat on a second floor bedroom and bouncing on the bed, and I actually went right through the window, right through the screen, and landed out in the front yard, and was fortunate not to have, you know, broken my neck and everything. But again, it was back to the hospital. I was in and out of the hospital quite a bit as a kid. And, in fact, my mother kids about it now. She says, I should have probably just put a doctor on retainer. But I got through it, and I had some interesting visions, if you will, along the way. And I'm a very intuitive person, so I see things things that a lot of other people don't seem to see. And I've been curious about that throughout my career. And I'm also an optimist, and I'm a Zentrepreneur, and that's why I wrote this book, because a Zentrepreneur is somebody that combines positive thinking and balance and well-being and presence and poise and grace, the art of and discipline and practice of Zen, with action, you know, with entrepreneurship, with taking risk and doing something. So the Zentrepreneur, and I believe there's a Zentrepreneur in all of us, it's our spirit. And it's our spirit seeking creative expression and manifestation in some way, you know, while in this lifetime. So the Zentrepreneur in me has continued to call for expression, and I've been fortunate enough to listen and help remove some of the obstacles so that life force and that chi energy and that what I call Zenergy can flow. And it's not always easy, but It's life itself, if you ask me.
So I can't move on yet because I know my listeners will get me if I do. What did you see? Do you remember? And I promise we're going to talk about your book, but I got to ask this question. What did you see?
Well, you know, I've worked with people like Danny and Brinkley and Eben Alexander, who've had these phenomenal stories about, the light and the angels and the messages they were sent back to return with. I was not by any means, officially clinically dead, so to speak, and returning from that. But I've had these visions of life after life, so to speak, that I've also had recollections of times from as far back as 2,000 years ago, where, in fact, as a young child, one of the very first things, and I'm very artistic, one of the very first things I used to draw when I was a child were drawings of the crucifixion, if you will, as if I were there, vivid memories of the crucifixion. So I had visions, if you will, of spiritual beings there for me and reminding me that I was okay and that my time had not yet come, so that I was safe. I guess that's probably the best way I could put it, that I was safe and I really didn't have anything to worry about.
Okay. So when you were playing football or in your professional life, let me back up just a minute. Why don't you tell people before we get on with this where they can find you and see you while we're talking and find your books?
Website? Yeah, my website is venturemanagementconsultants.com. That's venture as in nothing ventured, nothing gained. So venturemanagementconsultants.com lists all of the books I've written, and there's some video clips and things like that on the website that people can see. You can also go to johnjmurphy.net, and I'm there. I'm also on Twitter as Sage Leader. And then, which is the title of one of my books, Sage Leadership. I'm on Facebook, and I'm on LinkedIn and places like that. And I'm also very Googleable.
So when you were growing and evolving in your early years as a business person, I'm assuming you knew that you were different. How did you deal with other business people and them not think you're a heretic?
It's a great question, Eva, because I don't go into businesses and teach meditation techniques and teach yoga practices and teach. I don't come right out with, hey, we're gonna teach leaders how to be more present and be more awake. I use very practical tools to do it, and these are the tools I teach and write about in Zentrepreneur. One of the tools is the ability to ask profound, simple, very revealing questions. So, for example, in the book, the first chapter is titled, What If? And I teach businesses how to get out of their own way, business leaders, and play with ideas. And that's really where creative expression comes from and innovation. What if, and there's great examples of this, like with Amazon. I don't know if you saw the episode of 60 Minutes where they're landing packages in people's yards with drones as a test. Now, it might seem crazy, but the same company, Amazon, was the first to beam books to people on a Kindle so that they were no longer shipping paper through the air or on the road. Just beam me the book. And innovations like that come from organizations that get past excuses why they can't do things. And it's the same thing with individuals. We have to get past all the reasons why we can't do certain things or shouldn't do certain things and really explore what's possible, because the possibilities are endless. So chapter one helps people and organizations open up into the question, what if, what if I tried something new? What if I took a class online or a class after work? Or what if I changed careers? Or what if I started up a business on the side? Or There's just endless what ifs. And then chapter two is why, and chapter three is why not. So when we take an idea and we contemplate it without judgment, we play with it. You know, why should I do it? Why should I write a book? Why should I start a company? And then why shouldn't I? It grounds us in reality a little bit, because a lot of people have great ideas and great visions, if you will, especially intuitive people who have these vast visions, but they really don't know how to take them and make them real, if you will, and practical, and manifest them into something that in business is called cash flow and, you know, stabilization and monetization. So in order for a business to succeed, we've got to have blood flow. And in business, blood flow is cash flow. So I teach very practical methods to take ideas and translate them into very rewarding win-win type of results, where the client wins, the customer wins, the associates win, the shareholders win. And it's a very powerful model, because so often we grow up in a win-lose, right-wrong kind of dualistic, egotistical mindset. And, you know, when you're going into the lion's den with egos, you can't just go in and say, hey, we're going to teach Zen practices and we're going to teach poise and confidence. You've got to be clever about taming the lion, so to speak.
So pretend like my listening audience is a business that you're walking into, and share, if you would, some of your techniques so they'll have an idea of what you're talking about.
Sure. So the first thing I would do is
tell them so they'll know why they need to go get your book.
Sure. Well, the first thing I'd do is I'd say we need to get the team together, starting with the leadership team together, and do spend a couple of days on a workshop learning about how to pull together as a team and wake up, so to speak, and see what's really going on in the business. The truth is, a lot of senior management doesn't know what's going on in their own business. And the truth is, a lot of people on the front line or in the middle of the organization don't know what's going on in the overall business either. They know their area, they know their functional area and their job area, but they don't really see the whole picture. So what we do is we go in and facts and data, we assemble a team, we train the team, and then we get out and we collect very potent, very, in many cases, brutal facts. It's kind of like taking yourself to the doctor and saying, hey, give me an honest checkup, okay? And the doctor knows what tests to run and what data to collect and how to analyze that data. Hopefully they do. And they can, from that data, they can say, well, you know what? There are some things here that concern me about your organization, your body. Well, that's the same thing that we do with businesses. There are some things here that concern us about your ability to function efficiently and effectively. And here's what they are, and here's the data. So, and it has to be fact-based so that it doesn't come off like it's just an opinion. You know, the data say that you are taking 120 days to do something that shouldn't take more than a week. And that's real data. The data say that by the end of the line, nothing's really getting through correct the first time. There's all kinds of little rework loops and fixes and adjustments, and that's adding up to a lot of time and money and waste. So what I do is I use data and a very powerful data collection process with the company's own people. I don't bring in consultants to do this. We don't do it to people. We do it with people. So we come in, we go through a very detailed assessment, like a diagnostic, and from that data, the team, as well as the management team, cannot help but say, we need to make changes. This, we cannot live with this. This is not acceptable. There's no way we can continue to take, you know, 45 days to do something that should take 45 minutes. And you'd be surprised at how ugly some of this data can appear. And then that's the awakening. Now, I never have to mention the word Zen. I never have to mention anything ultra-spiritual to a business group to accomplish that kind of awakening. What I do have to do is practice it myself, because it's like a quarterback walking up to the line of scrimmage. You have a play called, you have a game plan, you've practiced it over and over again, but the truth is, when that ball is snapped, you don't know what's going to happen. And that's a good metaphor for life. When we wake up every day, we really don't know what's going to happen. And I've learned that my whole lifetime. Just when I think I'm getting it right, there's some accident or some adversity or some tough break.
So I have a question. You haven't caught me yet. I'm still waiting so far it sounds to me like you're a salesman coming into my office to sell me anything, but I don't know what you're selling yet. But you haven't told me the practices. Tell us some practices, if you would. So, because I want my listeners to have something when they hang up the phone today, to have a reason to buy your book, but also to have some tools. Give them some glimpses into your book, so they'll have a tool or two that they can take away with them.
Okay. Step one. Ask questions and get the facts. Step one. Ask thoughtful, profound questions and get the facts, because a lot of people go through life with assumption and they don't have the facts and they're not grounded in reality. And when we go through life basing our decisions on assumption, we get ourselves in all kinds of troubling situations. So step one, get the facts. And you get the facts by knowing what to ask and how to ask it, which is spelled out very clearly in the book. So know what to ask, and this is of yourself.
Can you share some of that with us? I like for them to take home some. When you say what's shared in the book, give us one or two of your bullets. You don't have to give away everything, but give us something.
Okay. Well, I thought I did with the first three chapters. Chapter one, what if? Stop. Ask yourself the question, what if? What if I start a practice of my own? What if I change jobs? What if I change careers? Open your mind to the possibilities that surround us all. What if is one of the most brilliant questions you can contemplate, because it just opens us up to endless possibilities. And it allows us to get past some of the paradigms and some of the resistance that we have going on internally, some of the inner programming. We're all programmed. So start with a question like, what if? And explore it. And then ask, why should I do it? Why should I do this? And, if you want to throw an idea at me and we can play with it a little bit, I'd love to do that over the phone so your listeners can hear it.
First of all, I guess there are two scenarios. I guess people have a product to sell. And then secondly, employee relations. So pick one of those. And how do they change their upper management? Let's say they're in mid-management and they have your way of thinking, a conscious way of thinking, rather than everything be about run, 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 and make the money. It also is important, what happens to the people here? So how would they convince upper management to change the way they do this business? Or secondly, what if there's an employee problem? How do you address, get employees to be more conscious-minded and, treat other people like they want to be treated? Hard to say.
Yeah, I'm going to start by going right back to the facts. Conflict comes when people are arguing over assumption rather than fact. You see it all the time. This person thinks they're right. This other person thinks they're right. Who's right? And the truth is, usually it's no one, neither one of them. But they think they are, but they don't have good data. They don't have a good understanding of what's really going on. So, the first thing I teach employees to have influence over their bosses is you have to have credibility. You've got to establish credibility for anyone to listen to you seriously and believe you. And in fact, I have to practice that every day, because when I go into a business as a consultant, I have no authority to tell anyone to do anything. There's no authority in my work. In fact, this summer I was working, I was at an engagement in Washington, D.C., where Colin Powell was speaking at the same engagement. And Colin Powell said the very same thing about when he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He said, I had no authority in that position. People don't understand that. But there's no authority in that position. All you have is your personal influence. And that's the very same thing of most of us in businesses or in organizations or in schools or hospitals or wherever we work. If we want to affect change, we have to be taken seriously. We have to have credibility. So how do you get credibility? Well, one of the first ways you get credibility is you get smart. You get good data. You get good information. So you know things that other people don't know. And then you share it. And that's where an awakening takes place. It's like, wow, I didn't realize we took that long. I didn't realize we had that particular problem. The other thing you have to do is you have to have not just good data on what's wrong, you have to have good ideas on how to fix it. So what ideas do you have and how credible are those ideas? So this book, Zentrepreneur, teaches these very practices. How do you get the ideas? How do you risk-proof them, so to speak, so that, you know what, when you're dealing, one of the chapters in the book is called Yeah, But. And the Yeah, But chapter is that we always run into these Yeah, Buts. So the boss says, yeah, but now's not a good time. Yeah, but we just don't have it in our budget. Yeah, but whatever. So when we anticipate what the Yeah, Buts are going to be, and we're clever in the way we respond to those, we come up with what I call countermeasures. Here's some things we can do that don't cost a lot of money, that don't take a lot of time, that would really make a positive difference. And the other very important piece of all of this is that we build what I call a constituency for change, a team. So we pull other people into our ideas, into what it is we want to change or accomplish, and we get those on board. There's a whole chapter titled Who, and in the Who chapter, who do we surround ourselves with? It's got credibility. Who do we pull together to help us get to move forward and convince whoever we need to convince to loan us the money or give us the permission we need? Does that help answer your question a little bit, Eva?
Yes, that helps me a lot. Thank you. That's wonderful. So I have a couple questions here. What would you say is the first role of a Zen leader? And how do they find what that is in their particular situation? Does it change? Do the roles change depending on what you're doing?
Well, I believe
that makes sense at all.
Yeah, I'd start by saying I believe you can apply Zen presence in any role. It doesn't matter if you're a school teacher, a surgeon, an astronaut, a dancer, a radio host, an author, whatever. Zen is a way of being present. It's a way of being composed and compassionate and poised. So when we wake up in the morning, and I always like to start my day with about 20 to 30 minutes of deep meditation. And to me, that's like taking a shower in the morning. It's very, very important to me. And we start our day in peace. You know, a lot of people don't do that. They get up in the morning, the first thing they do is they put on the news, they put on some noise, and then we're just inundated with you know how sometimes the news is. It's here's everything going wrong in the world, and the weather's terrible outside today. So prepare yourself, brace yourself. And if we start the day out at this frequency of agitation, because at the end of the day, it's all about energy and it's all about frequency. If we start our day out in this agitated frequency or state of mind, It can just get worse from that. With the law of attraction, we're just asking for more of the same throughout the day. So I think, you know, going back to some of your steps, whatever your role is, learn to practice presence. And I think meditation is a fantastic technique for that. I also think that contemplation is a fantastic technique for that. So contemplation is where we learn to suspend judgment and we learn to challenge assumptions. Meaning that, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't have my facts straight. Maybe there is a better alternative to doing this than the way I think. So rather than my way or the highway, maybe I should let go a little bit of that ego thinking, that dualistic I'm right, you're wrong thinking, and open myself up to alternatives. So another great technique, if you want techniques, is whenever there's a problem, seek at least three alternatives before you make a decision. That's a simple technique. I teach it in businesses all the time. But I used to have a boss who said, John, don't ever come to me with a problem without at least three solutions. Now, most of us have heard the old saying, don't come to me with a problem without a solution. But try three, because what that does is it gets us outside the box just a little bit. It's like, well, geez, you know, I've got this one really brilliant idea that I think is brilliant, but I got to come up with two more before I'm going to be taken seriously. Here's what happens, Eva. A lot of times, you know, idea two pops up, and then idea three pops up, and then all of a sudden there's idea four and five, and we end up going with some combination that we never would have thought of if we just went with that first idea, that first solution. So I think it's really important, number one, to start each day being present and being tuned in and being at peace. So if we want to draw peace into our lives, we have to be at peace internally in our lives. And then when people approach us with problems, with noise, with whatever it is we face every day, with resistance, with difficulty, we're careful to just jump right into the flames or jump right into the battle. We remind ourselves that, you know what, there are solutions to every problem. In fact, there are multiple solutions. And so the more contemplative we can be in exploring those solutions, what we're doing is bringing peace to the whole team. We're bringing presence to the whole team. And so often, you know how the old saying is, misery loves company and drama loves drama. When we transcend that temptation and we approach it with grace and with presence, it's very inspiring to people.
So I have another question here. My background's in litigation. You can imagine how that is.
Sure.
How do you, when you have two people who's, and I believe that if we could change the way, you know, because lawyers kind of run the world in law and politics, and if we could change the way lawyers negotiated their cases and tried to settle cases, you know, a lot of, you know, we would have a resolve a lot of things. How do you get two lawyers to speak consciously to one another?
Well, you have to. I just did a workshop last week out in New Jersey with a whole group of corporate lawyers. So these were not litigators, but these were corporate attorneys. And yeah, you know what? Everybody.
How'd you get that job?
Own...
I'm curious.
I'm sorry.
How'd you get that engagement? Did the lawyers approach you, or did you go to them? I'd love it if lawyers were approaching conscious speakers.
Oh yeah,
they call you.
They approached me, but it's part of a contract I have with that. This is a company that's got 62,000 people. It's a very large company that I'm under contract with, and so they have their own corporate staff and they have, you know, external staff as well. But I've been working with this company since last June, and we've been making remarkable progress. And it was the lawyers inside the company, the chief legal counsel, the senior executive legal counsel, who commissioned my help to facilitate this workshop last week. And we have now a 30-day data collection process underway. So I was training the team last week. And just like I said earlier in the show, we get the brutal facts. We look at how ugly the legal process is in this case, and all the redundancies and all the waste of time and all the distrust and all the triplicate forms that have to be filled out and triple checked and all of this stuff. And we have a week-long event in February where we identify where all the, I call them ugly babies are, where all the ugly babies are, and then we fix them. And we fix it at the root cause level. And it's profoundly culture changing. It's transformational. So, you know, whether it's lawyers or anyone else, you've got to have a methodology to wake them up to just how wasteful a lot of processes are and how much better off we can all be when we eliminate a lot of that waste. Now, the trick, of course, is with some attorneys, if they're making a whole lot of money because the process is ugly, And it does take a long time, and you've got husbands and wives who are getting divorced, fighting over this and that, and the lawyers are getting paid either way. There's got to be some stake in it for them. So it's got to be a win-win-win kind of situation. But I'll tell you what, I went through a very painful divorce about 3 years ago, and my ex-wife hired a lawyer, and she was really difficult to work with. I ended up not even hiring a lawyer, and I practiced what I preach. I got the facts. I laid them all out. I didn't fight. I had no need to fight, no reason to fight. We came to a very amicable agreement. We did it very quickly. And it was very, 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 very tough on me. I mean, this was... I didn't want it. I didn't expect it. But my ex-wife just wanted to go another way. And there's nothing I could do about it other than love her and let her go, which is exactly what I did. But in dealing with the lawyer, actually, her lawyer actually learned to trust me. And we were able to work out a very amicable deal, like I said.
That's a wonderful thing. I admire you so for walking your talk. I really do.
Well, so that's what I call presence. Yeah, it's presence.
Can you give us some success stories that you've had with businesses?
So my listening audience can
understand how they can change their lives and their businesses if they practice what you're doing.
Yeah, well, one of the guys that endorsed Zenpreneur, his name is Dan Barcheski. He's the founder and CEO of a company called Axios Incorporated. Axios made the Inc. 500 fastest-growing companies six different times, which is a rather prestigious recognition and award. And 1988, Dan started Axios, which happens to be the same year I started my company, Venture Management Consultants. And Dan approached me, we were old friends, and he approached me and said, hey, would you help me shape my company and my culture, which I did. And it was it developed into a great relationship over the years. And just about a year ago, Dan asked me to come back. He was actually selling his company now to his employees. He's retiring. And so he was selling the company to his employees, and he asked me to come in and lead some workshops for his new leadership team, which I did. And when he introduced me to everyone, he said, a lot of you haven't met this guy yet, but you know how our culture is very participative. It's very team-oriented. We've been this is the fourth largest employer in this region. Of Michigan, of West Michigan, very successful company. He said, "This guy right here is one of the reasons for that. He's the guy that really helped us design and develop and build the culture we have here today." So, I mean, that certainly felt good to me to have that kind of an experience. I had a similar experience. This was probably about 8 years ago, where the admiral of the SSP division of the Navy awarded me a great honor after leading an awakening type exercise in Washington D.C. for this branch of the Navy. It's called the Strategic Systems Programs. I've had lots of experiences where businesses have said, we didn't know what we didn't know. We were in the dark, and you came in and helped wake us up, and we appreciate that. And from that awakening, we've been able to do so much better. And the same is true of individuals, not just organizations. I've had countless individuals tell me that. I've trained people now in 50-something countries. I've been running my business for almost 26 years now, and had just the pleasure of meeting so many amazing people and contributing the best I can. And it's very rewarding for people to come back, in some cases years later, and say, you changed my life, or you changed my business, or both.
So you use a phrase in your book, you have to get people to think systems thinking. What do you mean by that? What is
that? Systems thinking, yeah, you know, a lot of times people hear the word systems thinking and they immediately think of IT or information technology or information systems. You know, we didn't need a new software system. That's not what I mean. When I talk about systems, I'm talking about the overall ecosystem of the business, the overall value delivery system to the customers. So what that means is, and systems thinking is like sometimes referred to as the butterfly effect, meaning that, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings in Indonesia, and 3 days later it's raining in Southern California, and there's some relationship between those data points, if you will. So it's another, and I use this metaphor a lot in some of my workshops. It's like going into the doctor and saying, I have a headache. Can you help me? And the doctor says, yeah, take an aspirin. That is not systems thinking, okay, because all you're doing there is treating a symptom, a headache, with, you know, in this case, a synthetic drug. And if you're not careful, you could be making things worse. You know, what we all know in the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry, is side effects. You know, so the headache is temporarily gone, but the liver is now suffering or something like that. So true systems thinking is where the doctor is wise enough and well-trained enough to say, well, let me check you out. Let me see what this is all about. I see what it is. The reason you've got a headache is because there's inflammation in your neck. It's kind of pinching off a nerve, and the reason you've got inflammation is because your body is very acidic, so you need to eat more alkaline foods and eat less or drink less acidic, acid-forming type substances. Oh, and look at this. Your hips are slightly out of alignment, so you're favoring one side, and that's actually causing the inflammation that's causing the headache. So the whole point of this, Eva, is that systems thinking is about getting the true root cause, what I often call the leverage points. Because if we can find the right leverage point, whether it's in our own body or it's in our relationships with people or it's in our business, we find the right levers, we can change the world. And the problem is a lot of people, they don't dig that deep. You know, we got a headache, here, take an aspirin. You know, we've got a quick fix mentality where we really don't drill down into those deeper causes where the real action is. So that's part of the awakening. When I go into businesses, I use a tool called the five whys. The five whys is where you ask why five times, five levels deep to get to, and you know, it doesn't have to be exactly five. It's usually four or five or maybe even six whys. But at that level, you get down to something really interesting. So, for example, in automotive, why won't people's cars start from time to time? Because they leave the lights on. Why do they leave the lights on? Because they forgot to shut them off. Why did they forget to shut them off? Because nobody reminded them to, or nothing reminded them to. And then all of a sudden you start drilling down, and you're like, well, you know what, why don't we design in automatic shutoffs? Or bells or whistles to remind people to shut their lights off. That's a technique in Japan referred to as poka yoke, which means mistake-proof. And when we get down to that level where we can mistake-proof things, so you can't make a mistake. The system outsmarts you, so to speak, so that you cannot, you know, lock your keys in your car, or you cannot, you know, make a common mistake. That's a really intelligent way to run a business. It's a really intelligent way to run your life.
So can you apply this to your personal life as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I've applied it to my personal life, and I continue to. Because the more I get out and teach and work with people and companies, the more I learn. You know, there's a great humility to all of this, and I think that's part of my upbringing was I was raised to be very humble and very open, if you will, to alternative points of view and ideas. And so, yes, you can, of course, an individual can ask what if and why not and who and how. An individual can surround themselves with wise people. I always say wise people, pay attention to wise people. We need to pay attention to who we pay attention to. problem a lot of people have is that they're listening to people giving them lousy advice, and they accept it. And it isn't that people are intentionally giving lousy advice. They actually think they're helping, but they really don't know what they're talking about. And sometimes these people are very close to us. They could even be family and very close friends, and they've all got answers. They don't have good facts and data, like I talked about earlier, but they've all got opinions. Here's what you should do. Here's what you should do. Oh, you should get even. You should. Here's what you should do to get back at that person, and here's what you should do to get that job that you really want. And this is coming from somebody who's unemployed and is in a lousy relationship, perhaps. So we really have to pay attention to who we pay attention to. And, that applies to every one of us.
I think that's really wonderful advice. So does your diet play a role in your life, your conscious living?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I hear my passion is alternative medicine and science of consciousness. So when you started talking about that, I'm like, okay, this guy has a broad spectrum here. He knows more than is in this book. So tell us about that.
Oh, there's no question about it. I'll tell you, in the year 2000, I lost my father to cancer. And about 10 years later, I was at a conference out on the West Coast, one of David Wolf's Longevity Now conferences. Met a woman there who had survived pancreatic cancer in the year 2000. And I was like, wow, in the year 2000, that's the year my father died of cancer. Wasn't pancreatic, but it was a cancer, leiomyosarcoma. Anyway, she said, yeah. The doctor sent me home. I said I was done. Nothing more they could do. I'd done the chemo, and I was getting sicker than heck. And I said, so what did you do? She said, I went to a center called Hippocrates in West Palm Beach. I almost fell over because West Palm Beach is where my father died. And this woman was from California. She says, yeah, I went. And I said, what'd they do? Well, they put me on this strict, all green, all raw diet, taught me how to meditate, taught me yoga, taught me a bunch of meditation techniques, taught me how to let go. And so I was like just really astonished by this. And I know diet's been important to me, as has exercise, my whole life. I'm very interested in feeling good physically because I think it does affect us mentally and emotionally and spiritually and financially and socially and everything else. But I'm very into holistic, that's all part of systems thinking, by the way. So, so for many, many years now, Eva, I have done just a tremendous amount of research and experimentation on my own self with diet and with different forms of exercise. And, I'm almost 54 years old, and I feel like I'm 30. And people are blown away when they meet me and they realize and they find out how old I actually am, because most people tell me
we're
I don't
the
look
the same
even...
age.
Yeah. Okay. And
yeah,
so, you know, I attribute a lot of that certainly to what I eat. And again, this is about getting the data. I can't emphasize that enough. A lot of people think that sounds boring, but you know, when you go to the store and you're shopping up and down the aisles, and you got all these boxes saying here, this is vitamin fortified cereal, and this is calcium enriched milk or whatever, you're not getting the true story. You're not getting the real facts. This is all, you know, it's all a bunch of marketing to sell stuff. And when you get the real facts from true experts, you probably shouldn't even be shopping in the middle of the store up and down the aisles. All the good stuff's on the edges.
I totally agree.
And when you understand how important alkalinity is in your body, and you understand how important even water, I have a special water machine that actually changes the molecular structure of the water. It alkalizes the water. It certainly filters the water. It's awesome because if, 75% of our body is water, the last thing you want to do is have a polluted swimming pool, so to speak. So checking the pH balance, checking the alkalinity and the balance. You don't want a body that's too acidic because it's going to end up full of disease. And you know what acid does to joints, what it does to skin, what it does to hair. It destroys it. So yeah, I'm a practitioner not only of best practices in business, but really a life coach and life best practices. And to do that, I have to continue to study, research, get the facts, meet with the experts, and experiment. Because sometimes we just don't know what we don't know, and therefore we have to experiment to get good data.
So how do you, I want you to talk just a minute about going back to employee conflict. How do you talk to employees about how to resolve conflict within it? I know you've covered this already, but I want you to say it in perhaps a different way, because we were talking about the bosses, but how do you do peer-to-peer?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to say? Eva, I'm going to be really blunt with people. I'm going to say, step one, look in the mirror. If you've got conflict with people, it means you've got conflict with yourself. And it's just so easy to point the finger at the rest of the world and say, you know what, the problem's the boss, the problem's, you know, my spouse, the problem is my mom or dad or whatever. When a lot of times when we're doing that, we're not recognizing that we reap what we sow. And that we're part of that equation, like it or not. So the brutal facts might be, you know what? Maybe I'm not that difficult, or maybe I'm not that easy to work with. Maybe I'm not credible. Maybe I seem to just sort of wing it, and people don't take me seriously, including the boss or my peers. Maybe I talk too much, or maybe I don't speak up enough. Okay, so the Zentrepreneur is always looking in the mirror first. Carl Rogers had a great term for this. He called it locus of control or place of control. And most people, it seems, go through life with an external locus of control, meaning they're putting that placement, that location of control outside of themselves. It's out there somewhere, and it results in a lot of blame, a lot of litigation, a lot of lawsuits, you know. It's somebody else's fault that I ran over my own foot with a lawnmower. So I should sue the lawnmower company. I should sue the lady that asked me to cut down the tall grass in the back of her yard where I tripped over a rock and pulled the mower up over my foot and ended up in the hospital for a week and 10 hours of surgery. It's in no more football. I mean, that's a true story. That's my story. That's exactly what I did. But you know what? I didn't blame anybody other than myself. I said, you know what? Until I take ownership for this, it's never going to heal, and I'm never going to get over it. And like I said earlier in the show, 2 years later, I had found the energy, the Zen energy, the presence, the peace of mind to put mind over matter and heal, and play football for one of the best college teams in the country, at Notre Dame. So when dealing with other people at work or at home, step one, look in the mirror and ask yourself, what can I do differently to get my point across, or to be a little easier to work with, or to be a little more gentle or kind or loving? Because what happens when we work on our inner world, our outer world gets better and better and better. But a lot of people have that backwards, and they spend more time trying to get the outer world to change without doing any of the inner work. I just think that's a huge miss opportunity.
Absolutely. So tell us, we've got, you know, about 7 or 8 minutes. Tell us about your other books. You've got a whole list of them. Tell us about those.
One of the books that's just gotten a lot of attention, Eva, is called Beyond Doubt, 4 Steps to Inner Peace. Beyond Doubt is can be seen at my website, johnjmurphy.net. Beyond Doubt won Editor's Choice Best Inspirational Book of 2010 in Canada, out of Toronto, All Books Review. It's a fantastic book. In fact, I channeled it from a – well, I started the book with a very powerful experience. I didn't mention this, but I was working in Europe, and I had just spent a week doing a workshop in France. And I had the weekend there in France, and then I was going up to England for the next week. So I had a weekend to wander around. And a lot of times when I do that, I go to cathedrals. I like to take in the culture. And by the way, this was in 2009, and I had not written a book since 2000. I stopped writing when my father died. I sort of lost interest, and I just put my my efforts into my consulting work and in coaching and teaching. Anyway, I'm in my hotel room on Saturday morning, and a very powerful presence came over me and said, it's time to write, and you'll write this book, and this is what you'll say. And I I resisted. You know, I put the brakes on. I said, no, I'm not writing. I'm too busy to write. I have too many other things going on. This isn't a good time. I did all the yeah buts. Okay, well, this presence would not leave me alone. And make a long story short, I just decided, all right, rather than resist, I'm going to flip open my laptop and I'll just start writing whatever comes to me. And this was in late January, early February, and I was booked solid for like the next 4 or 5 months. So one of my biggest worries was, how am I ever going to finish this book? I don't want to start something I can't finish. Make a long story short, I wrote for 2 straight days, and the book is Beyond Doubt, 4 Steps to Inner Peace. When I returned to the States, this was when we were deep into the recession, and all of my work was either postponed or canceled for the next 4 months. It was as if the Holy Spirit or some great power completely cleared my schedule so that I could finish this book, which is what I did then. Of course, I finished it. And as soon as I finished it. Pardon?
I said, I so get that. Same thing happened to me, except when I didn't listen, when I resisted, bad things happened until I finally submitted.
Oh, So I didn't resist that long. Like I said, I resisted maybe for, half hour, an hour. But it was a truly profound experience. And, in fact, when I pick up Beyond Doubt and I read it now, I'm almost surprised I wrote it. I'm like, wow, this is... Did I write that? That's just amazing. And then I've written all kinds of other books. You know, I wrote a book called Reinvent Yourself back in the mid-90s, and that got a lot of attention. Reinvent Yourself is actually a novel. It's a business novel. It's a story about a guy that gets fired from his job, and he's angry, and he's angry at his ex-boss, who he thought was his friend. He's angry with his wife. He's alienated with his 2 sons. He's just a miserable guy, and he ends up running into a consultant who helps him awaken, and he reinvents himself. And it's a very touching, soulful story that's done very well. So those are just 3 of the books I've written. I just came out with my 17th book. It's actually a book called There Is an I in Team. You know, everybody's familiar with There's No I in Team, but this is a book that illustrates that there's not just one, but many I's in Team, and the I's are things like inspiration. Your team's going nowhere if it's not inspired. Innovative, your team's going nowhere if it's not innovative. Imaginative, it basically takes a number of very important team ingredients that just happen to begin with I, and put them all together into a recipe for very effective teamwork, which follows a book I wrote on teamwork that's a bestseller called Pulling Together. So Pulling Together is another one. I don't want to go on and on about all these books. They're all available to see on my website, except for the I and Team. That book just literally came out about a week ago, and I don't think it's even posted on my website yet. But it's available online through Amazon and the publisher's Sourcebooks. It's actually Simple Truths, which is now a division of Sourcebooks.
I'd like to go back to, you were talking about your book. You said you channeled this book. I know what you mean, that you mean... creativity or in creative intentionality or source or higher power or whatever. How can you, and we have about 3 or 4 minutes, no more, okay? How can you tell people how they can, besides be still and listen and meditate, what is it they're listening for? How do they know it's that? Is that clear?
Yeah, sure. I call it flow. In a word, I call it flow, Eva. And in fact, the four steps to inner peace I speak to in the book, Beyond Doubt, the four steps are let be, let go, let see, let flow. So real quickly, the let be phase is be present, be in the now. It's very in line with Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, and I've written articles for Eckhart Tolle and about presence and things like that. It's you know, accept what is, take responsibility, and stop arguing or fighting over what already is. Just breathe it in, breathe it out. You know, relax into the moment, whatever that might be. And then let go. Let go is so important. It actually led to what I now have is the Let Go Now workshop, which teaches all kinds of letting go techniques. It's letting go of mental baggage and clutter and noise and trauma and things like that. So we have to let go to let flow. And flow is that phase that we're in when we're at peak productivity. It's a timelessness phase. I get into flow when I write, and that's where these, I don't know where they come from. It's universal. It comes from source energy. It comes from Holy Spirit, whatever term you want to use. But you know you're in flow when you feel great. And if you're not going through life feeling great, and by the way, feeling great is so important when you understand the law of attraction, because when you feel great, you attract more. Yeah, you attract more feeling great into your life.
My producer just came in and said we have a new show following me that I didn't realize it's going to cut us off quickly. So maybe
okay.
We better wind up. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it was going to. I thought we had four more minutes.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that maybe my clock's wrong or something. I'm really sorry. Give us your website again, please.
Sure. It's venturemanagementconsultants.com. And, like I said, I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. Your readers and listeners can find me there. And I'd love to be of help.
Thank you for taking the time to come on my show. I appreciate it. And I
thank
you,
Eva.
For an honor your
Happy
work.
New Year.
Thank you.
God bless.
You too. Good night.